Oh, you got to check this out. The Spoils of Babylon, Eric John Rosch's epic novel, is now an epic miniseries coming to IFC Thursday, January 9th. Listen to these names. It's a six-part miniseries, by the way. Features Kristen Wiig, Tobey Maguire, Will Ferrell. Yeah, I've heard of that dude. Jessica Alba, Val Kilmer, Haley Joel Osment, Tim Robbins, Michael Sheen, and more. The premiere night will include two back-to-back episodes. The Spoils of Babylon, IFC, Thursday, January 9th at 10, 9 Central. Do not miss this television event. Hey, kiddies, hope you're enjoying your holiday. I would love to remind you to click through AdamCarolla.com when you're doing your Amazon shopping. Hit the banner and bookmark it. And, of course, your Mangria. Oh, what a way to enjoy the holidays. And one of my comic heroes is up next, the great Albert Brooks.
This is Carolla Digital.
Well, excited to be sitting here with the great Albert Brooks. Thought about this moment my whole life, and now finally here. Albert has been kind enough to invite us into his office, and we can sit down and do a little one-on-one with him. 2030 is the name of his book. It is available on Amazon. You can go to a link, by the way, on our site and go straight to it, straight to the site. So,
2030, the real story of what happens to America.
That's what I wanted
right,
to say.
Right, I didn't want people to think it was about vision.
Yes, no, you're right. Yeah, it seemed like it had to do with glasses. Yeah, it debuted right. at number 16 on New York Times bestseller list, and you can find out more about Albert, the book, anything else on albertbrooks.com. I'm a huge fan, and just to prove it to you, I wrote a book about 6 months ago, and I brought my book in, and I went to the entertainment chapter where I made fun of a lot of movies that I thought were overrated and heaped praise on others. And if you'd be so kind, could you read what I wrote about you before
you read it?
I knew we were going to be doing this. All right. Defending Your Life, funny, poignant, smart, inspirational. Sad that most of you have seen Happy Gilmore and Tommy Boy 250 times but have never seen this one. Best comedy of the last 25 years. Lost in America is another Albert Brooks masterpiece that never gets shown on TV. Why Billy Madison has to play on a fucking loop and Lost in America pops up once in Olympic season is not only confusing but cosmically wrong.
I'm going to cry. It sounds so sad. Yeah. I live in a cosmically wrong world, and I'm proud of it.
Enjoy.
That's very nice. Thank you.
Yeah,
I knew it was in there. I just wanted to hear it.
Really? I really love the book as well, and I love the idea of trying to figure out where we're going to be at in about 20 years as a nation, and some of the ideas were frightening, and then other ideas were sort of inspirational, like the fact that I won't step on too much, that we're all going to be driving electric cars this time.
Listen, the fact that we're here in 20 years, I think, is a hopeful book.
Yes.
Because there were many scenarios that, you know, I could have chosen.
Sure.
And 19 of them, we were all dead, and then this one.
But that there was a charge and drive, or charge and eat, sort of like the old old roller skating hops
right,
where they
right.
bring your burgers by, where you would charge up your electrical car while they served you burger and fries.
Yeah,
I thought it was a great idea.
Yeah, the charge-and-eat. Because as I said, you know, that now makes sense again. You can't eat in a gas station.
Right.
It's just you can't do it. Even though they sell the food, no one's going to roller skate over a burger while you're filling up with gas. It's a deadly combination.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Electricity takes a while.
Sure.
It's quiet and safe, and it's a great place to eat.
And some other things that were in there. We got the first half-Jewish president, which... And I what was the over-under on Jewish president versus black president 10 years ago, if I asked you? I mean, if you're a betting man.
It's a great question. I think that Jewish might have had the lead because Eliot Spitzer was gaining. He had a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then something goes on in these New York hotels. Everybody goes in and comes out ruined.
It's true.
By the way, Adam, I stayed in New York for a week. With all due respect, there wasn't. I never saw a maid I would rape. I don't know what this guy's, where this hotel is. I want to go check it out. Because the maids were all very nice, and they were just so sweet and everything. But they looked like my Uncle Zeke. I mean, I just don't know what how you accost a maid.
I've never seen a maid. First off, they're all a nationality and overweight. There's two things I factor in, but it's a crazy nationality that I'm not familiar with, and it's
just if you made a list of sexy, it would be one of the get a guy at Amco before you'd get that profession.
Right.
So I just I'm dying to see what the real story is here. I mean, there probably is the real story, but it just shows you that the penis leads. Always.
No, I know, and I like it when people try to figure it out aesthetically, like your cock knows what it's looking at, you know, like that with Schwarzenegger, when people go, gee, she wasn't even hot, or it happens all the time, which has to be the sort of 1-2 punch when you get caught up in one of these things.
I think it's always drugs. I think it's,
you do?
Yeah. I think it's always drugs. It has been my contention that there has never, in the history of murder, been a murder on the natch.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody did 20 minutes on the treadmill and stabbed their wife.
Right.
It's all drugs.
Yeah.
So, you know, it can be prescription drugs. It can be a drug and a drink. You know, maybe the guy was taking something and right before he had one little bar drink and it just, well, I gotta fuck the maid.
Right.
It just happened quickly.
But what do you think about this then? You know, you have the company Christmas party. And you got one of the guys who drives the van around here, works in the mailroom, but he has a couple pops of Jägermeister. And then he comes up to you and he's like, hey, funny man, you think you're so smart. I got to tell you, I wasn't that impressed and blah, blah, blah. And he gives you a bunch of shit. And then the next Monday you see him and he apologizes and he says, I was drunk. That's not what I was thinking. But isn't it what he was thinking?
I have a word for that. I have a word for that. It's called complicelts.
Mm-hmm.
And if you talk to anybody long enough, the compliment will turn into an insult.
Mm-hmm.
That's why if a guy comes up to me and says, I love your work, I thank him and try to get out. Because the second thing was, oh, defending your life was my favorite. Then the third thing was, I wasn't crazy about mother. Then the fourth thing is, you know, you never made me laugh as a stand-up. Then
right.
The fifth thing is, how come you're not as funny in your mother? You know, it always goes to the
right.
Bad part.
No,
so, and liquor just enhances
it.
Yeah,
it speeds it up.
Right. Liquor goes right to the insult.
It puts a bottle rocket up its ass.
I
agree. I know, because you get that. I had to actually not pose for a picture with someone because the complicelts hit so fast. It's like, could we get a shot? Could we get a picture? My husband is a huge fan, Oh, yeah, sure, we'll get a picture. He's going to love this. I, of course, didn't care so much for
the
mansion.
Before the picture's even taken.
Take the picture. Yeah, you know, not my cup of tea. And then the person was having trouble with the camera. By the time she got the camera straightened out, I said, by the time she was getting into... not funny, liked Kimmel better, husband wasn't such a... Right. I said, no picture.
That's right.
I said, I can't take this anymore.
It's amazing. They just can't hold back.
It's weird. And then there was... And she was like, what do you mean, no picture?
Right.
And I was
and then later when they meet their... You know, did you meet Adam?
Oh.
Yes. How was it? I told him what I really thought. Good for you.
Oh, no, it's this way. I asked him for a picture, and he screamed at me.
Yeah.
What a douchebag. You know all those Hollywood types.
The other thing are people who give you notes on 20-year-old product. That's a great thing. You know? Hey, can I talk to you for a minute? Yeah. In Lost in America, you shouldn't have done the scene at the... Oh, okay, great. Well, those two people are dead. Let's go revive them. You bring the film, and we'll redo it for you. You know, it's like, what do you... What does it make you feel better? It's just, you know, it's so funny. Like, you just want to... I want to walk through hospitals and go into people who are dying and just do that to them.
Yeah.
Excuse me, you don't know me, but I think you had a horrible profession.
Yeah, there must be a reason why your daughter's not talking
to
you.
That's right. What were you again? You worked for the department? What did you do?
So sad.
Yeah.
So you dying, would that be a lateral move? Because I've read up on you.
Right.
Yeah.
I said to my wife, I might be the only person alive on their deathbed who wishes they did spend more time at the office.
I'm sure she loves that. Yeah. So, Albert, I've been intrigued with you. Speaking of your family, I'm not so much your personal life, but I of course know your brother Super Dave, and your other brother, who ran or was the head of Daly and Associates, the advertising firm,
Cliff Einstein.
Cliff. There's a couple things. I had a girlfriend who worked as a receptionist over at Daly & Associates, probably in the late 80s.
There's not a child at the end of this story, is there?
Robert?
Yeah.
And then of course, Defending Your Life and Lost America both sort of took place in Ad Age. Was that your brother's?
Yes, I liked that profession. I understood it, and it was an all-purpose white-collar profession.
Right.
That I thought, you know, was you could you it just was a good middle class job for a person to have.
It was sort of the 70s sitcom equivalent to Architect, in the sense that
I'm trying to think how many shows were architects. In the
well, 70s. The Brady Bunch, dad was an architect,
right? But those shows never showed anybody doing.
No,
anything.
They never did anything. But you wouldn't have to question it, which was. He was
right. How could he afford that house?
Right, because he could have been a very popular architect, right. or he could have had money problems in being an architect. And if he was a fireman, there'd be too much woven in.
No,
architect, no one wants to see any blueprints or anything.
It allows for the character to be somewhat creative.
Right.
Because I always, you know, what I don't like in plays or movies is when characters are funnier than they ever could be. You know, you get the world's funniest cop, and it just doesn't feel right.
Or the world's funniest nine-year-old.
Oh, I can't stand that. I can't stand children.
No, I got two kids. Neither one of them funny.
I have two kids, too. Well, my son is funny, but he's not funny in the way they write.
Right.
He's funny in, you know, he's funny in scary perceptions. He's learning the CompuSalts. He doesn't know enough of my work to get to the salts yet, but he's getting there.
Yeah.
But advertising I understood, and you know, a creative director of an ad agency as doing presentations every day, it's almost like stand up, you know.
Right.
You're on your feet, you're having to wow people. So
can we go back to the beginning? I don't know the ages of everybody.
The Big Bang?
Yes. No, there's the three Einstein brothers.
Yeah, there was a half brother, an older brother. My father was married for like an hour before he met my mother, and my oldest brother passed away. My oldest half brother was a very famous sports writer named Charles Einstein.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote the Fireside Book of Baseball, and you know, he wrote all of Willie Mays' biographies, and he was a sports writer for the San Francisco Chronicle during the heyday when the Giants came, and that was my half brother, and then Cliff and Bob are my brothers.
I feel like with the Einsteins, sort of, pardon the pun, but I feel like you guys are a great example of you give a kid a super high IQ and a very high intellect, and then they just go and take it in whatever direction they choose. Like, I feel like you could have been doing advertising and been successful at doing advertising if that's the path you chose.
Well, I mean, I don't think that anybody's guaranteed of anything. You know, I just don't think so. People ask me all the time about, you know, that. Well, you know, will your son go into show business, or is it automatic? And, you know, I sum up all of show business in three words: Frank Sinatra Jr.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
That's show business to me.
Meaning
that there's no guarantee of anything. That especially if you're in a job, especially in comedy.
Right.
You know, my wife says to me, "Do you think he's funny enough?" I said, "You know, it has nothing to do with what I think.
Right.
If this is what he wants, one day he'll go in front of 300 people, and it won't matter if he's Jesus. If he's, you know, 2 minutes in, if it ain't working, he's going to know."
It's funny because I always summed up show business in four words, which was Sammy Davis Jr., Jr.
Okay. Well, there you go. Was there one? Oh, there is.
I got an extra junior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But is
words.
There one?
I don't know.
Oh, he had a baby.
It'd be nice if there was.
Yeah, I think there is. Didn't they have a baby?
I'd assume. God knows.
But I don't think there's any guarantees of anything.
No, I what I'm saying is, do you ever meet those people where they have a high intellect and they seem driven They seemed focused. They seemed intelligent. And you say, here's a guy who could apply that to many different fields and probably be successful at them. I mean, you know, comedy's lower percentage than most. But I just mean, I know a few of those people where they've chose this profession, but they could have chosen any other professions, and they would have been good at that as well.
I understand. Well, I think you're just talking about a person who's got, you know, any sort of brain of any kind.
Brain, higher quality brain.
Then brain and drive, I guess.
Yeah.
But I never wanted to do anything else. But I never wanted to be a comedian. I was funny, naturally, but I wanted to be an actor. That's all I ever wanted to be. And I studied for it, and I did summer stock. But when I was 19, there was no job. I came here, and there was no part in, you know, the four parts available. Richard Dreyfuss was getting all of them.
Sure.
Yet at 19.
Sure.
So an agent said to me, he says, listen, if you go on you can get on television right now and do your comedy, and that will lead you, you'll get any acting part you want. And 8 years later, I was on the road on a snowy night in Boston on my third show at a club. Mm-hmm. I was as far away from acting as I'd ever been.
Sure.
And I thought, this was a lie.
Well, so when it comes to stand-up, do you feel like an actor playing the role of a stand-up or somebody who's just funny enough to do it because you can?
Well, all of my bits, all of my original bits were characters. I mean, from the dummy and the mime who talked, and I didn't feel comfortable. And I never to this day gone out and... I did in my own act, but I never went on a Carson show and did... I did stuff from the panel. Mm-hmm. But in one, I always did a bit.
Right.
I always did like a performance piece.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what I felt comfortable. Now, it's funny because I didn't do any live performing till like 5 years after network television.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day I got a call to open for Neil Diamond. Would I do that? And I had to put together... And I had no talking ability at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't, hey, how are you? I couldn't say it. So I just put together like six bits and turned around like an impressionist and turned around again with another bit.
Right.
And then after about eight shows, I started to say between bits, so it's Cleveland, huh? You know,
right.
and then I liked doing that. But I all my bits were acting bits. They were all performance pieces.
I don't know if you're considered reclusive, but it's not like you see Albert Brooks pop up on all the shows now. The book's out, 2030, and you're making the rounds. But I wouldn't see you as a guy who'd go out and pursue that just normally when you had your, you know.
I don't know. Something was wrong with me because... I did everything I could to keep success away. I don't know why. I still wonder about it. I mean, it wasn't true in the movies. You know, the movies that I made, I would have been very happy if I had the crowd that, you know, Spielberg had.
Right.
But I didn't. So I didn't make a movie to keep people away. But I didn't, you know, I didn't want to put myself... I guess a part of me... wanted to go for the long haul, and I think you know, show business is the great succubus of all professions. They'll take everything the first day if you give it.
Well,
so I just didn't. I just wanted to like protect myself.
Well, are you? Is there ambivalence about?
No, I have no ambivalence. I don't believe in it.
But
no, I mean it. I don't believe.
Well, what I mean is if you. I'll try not to graft this onto you, but if I could stay home, I would stay home versus perform.
By the way, look, you're heading towards that direction.
Yes,
look,
I am.
Look what you're able to do. This is almost staying home. You only drove 2 miles.
Yeah, no, that's my whole plan was to sort of stay home.
Absolutely, and I think that's a big future of show business. I'm amazed at how good Skype is getting, and I don't know why you or me or anyone that people would be interested in can't just have a cup of coffee and put on a nice shirt and turn on the Skype and have a show.
I agree, but you know, my thing is this ambivalence. I am ambivalent. I do want to make people laugh. I do feel like, well, you have this gift and you should share it with people. And there's another part of me that wants to draw the drapes and turn on SportsCenter and just drink red wine.
I understand that, Adam. I think I have the same gene. But I had another problem, and that's that I got all my comedy joy out of making one person on the phone laugh hard. And that was a problem. My agents always hated that. So if I was your buddy and I called you and we just, you know, and it was just a world-class funny conversation, I was satiated.
Right.
And that was the problem I had with doing clubs, because I didn't want to do 2 and 3 shows. After the 8 o'clock show went well, then the 10 o'clock people were there, and I'm just looking at them like, well, go ask the 8 o'clock people. It went well. Why do I have to do this again?
I do the same thing, I don't want to repeat. I don't want to repeat the same thing.
I did 40 Johnny Carson shows and never repeated anything. I did some of my best stuff once and once only. And, you know, people will come up, the comp of the CompuSalt, and say, I remember where I was when I saw that thing on Carson. Oh, my God, thank you. How come your movies never got that funny? Get out of here!
Yeah. No, it's weird that people cannot string together a sentence without eventually getting insulting, and then people...
Well, you know, it's funny, because imagine us with somebody. I mean, I don't know if people think that you really want to hear... You know, I did that Vanity Fair Proust questionnaire, and they said, what is the thing you dislike most? And I said, honesty from strangers.
Sure.
Because I don't... You know, what does Jonas Salk want me to come up to him and say, oh, my God, congratulations on polio.
Right.
You know, you didn't really get the muscular dystrophy, did you?
I love it when people compliment me.
Terrific.
And I've had this as the boss in certain times of my career. People come up after someone would compliment me. Someone else would come up and go, you know, that guy's just brown-nosing you because you're the boss. And
great.
I'd say, even better.
Great.
That's a better compliment.
I love brown-nosing.
It's better than an actual compliment.
You understand certain professions, how if you're president of the United States, you're surrounded by brown nosing, as well you should be.
Right.
Because why should you pay attention to what Rush Limbaugh says about you? You need to be, brown nosing is it's important for people in power.
So
they need it.
I concur. And you actually produce more testosterone the more, and maybe that's why these guys all have these affairs, because they get all the brown nosing, they start producing more testosterone, and then they take it out on the help.
I don't know.
If
Nixon never had an affair.
If you, we assume he didn't.
Oh, he couldn't have.
I know.
I think, you know, I didn't even think he'd have trouble with a maid, you know. He was just too scary. He
seemed too uptight. Like, it seemed like maybe he'd wear the top part of his suit and take his pants down and do it that way.
No, I don't see it. I don't see it. He was too busy hating everything.
I'd like to see they do those rankings of, you know, Hollywood's most beautiful women or best bikini bodies. I would like who no one could picture having sex.
Oh, the list would be huge.
It would be massive. Oh. Yeah, I'd like to think I'd be in the middle, not toward the top.
I don't know if you'd make the list.
Ooh, thank you.
I mean, that's a compu. That's a compu salt.
It's a compu salt. So if you had your druthers,
yeah,
and I guess you do, making films, writing books.
Well, this was the book forced me to go out and start to do some of these shows again, and I'm enjoying it more now. I don't know why. I think because as I'm getting older, there's less, I don't care as much, and that's an important aspect in life.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you know, you can say that to people, but you have to care at 20.
Right.
I mean, you have to, or you're never going to make it. But I care, but it's not like, it's not the make or break feeling that I once had. But the book was, I mean, I like movies, and I'm acting in a movie actually right now at this minute.
Drive?
Yeah, that's tearing Cannes up. It's like, it's the one time in my life I was invited to Cannes and I had a book. Oh, I can't go. I'm going to go do Kimmel.
Right.
But, you know, it was, I mean, what am I going to do? But, But the book was the most freeing writing experience I ever had.
Yeah.
Because of the constriction of writing movies to small budgets mm-hmm. is palpable.
Yes.
It takes you about three movies, and then you don't even let yourself think of anything expensive.
No volcano scene.
Nothing.
Right,
nothing.
Right.
The first movie, I made Real Life, mm-hmm. and I had a scene at the end where they burn up the house, and I had a horse had to die. And, you know, I just rode in a dead horse, and I had like a four-hour discussion with a guy at Warner's about how much you think that costs. How are you going to do that?
Right.
Well, you know how much it is to kill a horse?
Sure.
I said, I don't know. Aren't there horses dying all day?
Right.
How do they make glue? I mean,
right.
I believed that.
Sure.
You know. So, you know, your next movie, you're not going to put a dead horse, and then the third movie, you're going to stay in your room and keep the blinds drawn.
No,
So the book was the opposite of that.
I know, you start writing. I mean, even when we're doing man show sketches, you start writing for efficiency at a certain point. You start
Absolutely.
Realizing, you know, this takes place in New Mexico, and
then
eventually takes place at your neighbor's house because you don't feel like packing everyone.
And by the
up.
Way, that's prevalent in all. I always feel that if an actor is good and they get their start on a soap opera, if they stay too long, they will be unable to act anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a kind of acting that teaches you the worst parts of acting,
right.
You know, where you say the person's... there are things I can't stand in movies that can be so easily fixed.
You know what drives me nuts?
I don't like people's names.
Oh, when they're on the phone or just in person?
No, I'm going to talk to you for an hour. I'm never going to say Adam.
Right.
You know, you can say Adam if you're going to leave and I'm calling you.
Right.
Or you can say it if you're pissed. Listen, Adam, don't fuck with me.
Right.
But just to say, you know, oh, Adam, I don't know, Adam, I don't know. It's sloppy writing.
It is shitty writing, although I will say the only human beings who aren't really human beings who speak that way are politicians. Because they will do the thing where they Albert, I have children too.
Of course.
And they also live in this community.
And that's a phony.
And I have the same, Albert.
Yeah.
I can assure you that I have the same.
But it's phony.
But Albert, my children are the same ages. What ages are your children?
Mine?
Yes.
You're asking me seriously,
yes,
Adam?
Yes, Albert. Yes, I am. No, I'm asking you seriously.
My son is 12 and a half. My daughter has just turned 11.
I have a daughter that just turned 11, Albert, and a son that's 12 and a half as
Come
well.
Come on,
so I have the
Adam.
Same concerns that you have.
Come
in your
on,
community.
Adam. That's not
I drive
not
the
true.
Same roads.
Really,
we
Adam?
We attend the same. You're a Jew? Synagogues. Okay, Albert. Yeah, no, politicians will use that. But no, human beings don't. And in the sloppy movie making, I feel the exact same way.
But I'll tell you a fun game when you have nothing to do. Watch Titanic and count how many times he says Rose.
Mm-hmm.
It must be 5,000.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it drove me batty, and I know most people don't think, but, you know, it's like something's off. If the goal in a movie is to make it real, these little things that don't ruin it, people can't put their finger on it. But why is that? Why is it when he's yelling at her, it doesn't sound exactly right? Because he said her name 30 times.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I want to say when I argue with my wife.
And there's another thing, too, in movies.
I hardly ever call her Rose.
I thought I could teach a writing class and just give like six things and make people better mm-hmm. just for these six things. Take the word listen out before you say something.
Mm-hmm.
Listen. I don't know what it's a crutch.
Right.
It like buys you time.
Sure.
But in life, you don't do that. Listen, Adam.
No, you do. You don't. You do if you work security, because then you get into what Albert. What I'm going to need you to do for me right now is go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well,
that's
well
where
you're
get
talking
off.
About presidents and cops.
Oh, okay. You know what drives me nuts is
cops say your name, Mr. Carolla. Get out of the car, please.
Well, cops. I've figured out the cops do enough talking so that you can never go. What am I? There's no one robbing a bank, or I barely rolled through a four-way, or it's a wide open, or I pay taxes. Or
is this how you need to use your time?
Right. So they do a lot of, Mr. Brooks, what I need you to do for me right now is to go ahead and give me your license and ID okay right now. And it's all the extra talk doesn't give you an opening to interject the, is this what you need to do?
Do you know
with
the
your
great
time?
The great Orson Welles line about getting older? Mm-mm. He says, you know how you can tell you're getting older? When the cops look young.
Yeah. And it is weird.
It's just starting now for me.
It is weird.
Yeah, it's like a guy, hey, you're in high school. Get out of the car, sir.
I hate it when they do the 555s with the numbers, which immediately draw me out of
the movie.
What do
you mean? Over the radio? Oh, you mean it's a
4-5? They're giving the phone number out, and they go, 555.
Can't stand it.
Especially when it's unnecessary, like where the person goes, okay, let me give you my phone number. And they could just cut it there, but instead they go 555, and then they cut there. When you yell 555, you're saying, we're not in a movie.
I'll tell you something else. Telling people information that they already know for the audience's benefit.
Sure.
And that I can't stand. You know, you're my brother, and I'm saying to you in a scene, you know our mom is crazy. You know, I can't stand that. Let me tell you the best use of that, the most clever use, was 2001, A Space Odyssey, because he had a lot of information to give, but he had the astronauts do a BBC interview, and it was completely legal, you know? So tell me, what is your day like on the ship? Right. You know, as opposed to the two astronauts saying, what are we doing again tomorrow?
Yeah, shitty exposition.
Right. Always. That's why I like, you know, I say you put a scene, put a talk to a bartender is legal. You can do that. But tell someone who doesn't know.
No, I agree. And they always do that. Yeah, we're brothers. Yeah. Your dad always told us before he died in that horrible barn-raising accident. He knew that he... Yeah, they do a lot of that. Although,
What do you have, siblings?
I do. I have...
A brother?
I have a sister.
A sister. Have you ever said in the history of
her name is Super Lauren.
Oh, funny. Listen, Adam. have you ever said to her, you're my sister?
No,
of course not. It's insane.
No, I know, and I don't think of her that way either. But yes, I know. I've never said that to my dad.
No,
or my mom,
don't talk like
even
that.
Even my dog, she knows.
I was just thinking about that. You said that about. Have I ever said that to my dog? Like, yes, you have. You do with a dog. You go, you're a good dog.
Yeah, but you don't go, you're my good dog.
You're my good doggy. Yeah, well, when you talk to a dog, you're allowed to, you know, then you're allowed to break all those rules.
Yeah, you're right. And,
you're my good little doggy. You know my daddy was mean to me. There's a way to get exposition off. My sister's a drunk. You were a good little doggy. Listen.
Listen, Rose,
Rose,
my dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, although in 2001 Space Odyssey, I think they called Hal. I don't know if they called Hal a lot or not.
Oh,
maybe
but that was
just No, that
was okay, though, because he was a machine, and it's like you had to address the machine. It's almost like I bought that, because if you didn't call the machine by his name, you could think that he wouldn't know who you were talking to.
Mm-hmm.
Hal, can you hear me?
Right.
So you just can't say in a spaceship, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Because your astronaut buddy will go, what is it, Adam?
Right. It'll be confusing for the other guys in the cigar tube.
You sound just like my mother when she went crazy 4 years ago when she took too much medication, Adam.
The other, one of the things that drives me insane as someone.
Am I supposed to be talking about the book more? Is this the way the show goes?
No, that's the way the show goes.
Go ahead. Continue. I'm enjoying it.
Thanks. 2030, by the way, you go to adamcarolla.com. We have a link up at Amazon or on our site. It goes right to Amazon.
Let me tell you something. Amazon, and this would be a good thing in a movie, if you had a movie, Amazon sold out of their first books, and I went crazy. I got so mad because it's not a good. It means that they underestimated.
Yeah.
So, you know, then they had that horrible sign. It was on for 4 days. Delivery in 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
I went crazy. I called a publisher. I said, you know, why don't...
What's his name?
I'm not going to mention the name.
Rose?
No. I said, why don't we have a lecture series called How to Kill a Bestseller? You take, you know, you have the author go on, you do all the publicity, you get good reviews, and then you make it unavailable.
Yes.
I get tweeted all day long. Hey, I went to the Barnes & Noble. The book wasn't there. I can't stand that.
I hate to break your rule, but Albert, be prepared for a long and windy road of, I was at the airport, I went to the thing, but there's going to be a million other guys. They had Snooki's book. That book was front and center.
Yeah, well, I
and Shannon Doherty's book, I tripped over a pyramid of those, and then the guy behind the counter hadn't heard of you. And then I asked him about the book, and he didn't know what I was talking about.
Well, I mean, the holy grail for fiction is to get into the airport.
I
mean, that's,
know.
You know, I don't know. I that would be like, I couldn't believe to be in all those. Every novel at the airport has that same cover with the bloody sword.
Right.
You know, I don't know. That's all people are reading.
I have no idea who was interested in that shit. I really have no idea.
Did you read the Dragon Tattoo books?
No, but I'm not a reader.
Oh.
I have this theory.
Is anybody?
No. I have this theory. I don't know if you have this theory or share this theory. I think that you should walk through your own museum and not someone else's museum, meaning create yourself and don't sit around and appreciate other people's stuff, per se, or at least for too long.
Oh, good. You're good. You're good for the arts.
I'm saying good. I do not support the arts in any way, shape, or form. No, what I'm saying is...
So you would like a world with just your book and just
my
and nothing else.
Politics, everything. No, I like to sit alone and write down my own thoughts.
Well, you're
not
a writer.
Observe and collect and absorb others.
No, listen, in comedy, it's almost important in a way because you don't want to, you don't want to be influenced.
Right.
But I don't have any problem going to see... my wife is a brilliant painter, and I've sort of grown to understand that aspect of the world, and I feel safe there because I don't feel like I'm going to see a painting and go, oh, my God, he stole that from me.
Right.
You know? Those eight dots and that line, that
sure,
was mine.
That was me.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But I can understand not devouring your own profession. But what's wrong with going to a ballet?
No, I like all that stuff. I like
jazz
and symphonies and
all
that shit.
You just told me you don't.
No, okay, you're right. But all right, let me tell you something that drives me nuts in movies. When there's a problem and it needs to be addressed, but it gets addressed, but they don't really fix it. They just address it. I don't know if you've seen the Fast and Furious movies.
No, I didn't want to be influenced.
Artistically?
Yeah.
But Vin Diesel goes back to his
Vin
old neighbor.
Diesel. This is a great conversation.
And
then what? Vin Diesel goes back to his neighborhood?
You know Jordana Brewster,
okay.
Right? She's really hot, okay?
By the way, this is like the way 12-year-olds tell movies. So Vin Diesel?
Yeah.
So, all right,
okay.
So he goes back to his neighborhood? Okay.
All right. So, what
so you know Vin Diesel?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you know how Vin Diesel has really big guns and stuff? And okay, so Vin comes back to his old neighborhood. Like, you know, he lives in the neighborhood.
Right.
He's like toughest guy in the neighborhood.
Right.
But it's like everyone knows how tough he is. So they don't mess around with him.
Right.
You know, like Jordana Brewster's his girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's his sister, but she's really hot.
That's awesome.
And she lives in a bad neighborhood, but no one messes with her.
I understand.
Because Vin's such a badass.
And Vin's
open a can of whoop ass on anyone and fucks with him. Even though he was in prison,
they're
still scared of him.
And then Vin Diesel did the same thing. I understand.
And then he goes into this garage, and then she says to him, hey, look out. The house is being there's surveillance, and all these FBI guys are going to be watching the house. And then he says, "Don't worry about it."
Oh, so you're saying the information that nobody takes heed of?
Right.
The other thing that I can't stand in movies is where one sentence would end the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You're like 14 people.
Sure, could have had a million times.
All you have to say is, "That's the guy."
Right.
Okay. Goodbye.
End of
you
movie.
Know, here's what I thought would make for great. Great drama, but they'll never do it, is if you'd be willing to kill at any given time in a movie the high-paying lead.
Mm-hmm.
So think of a movie where that really Because you all instinctively know in drama how it's
going
to end.
You know they're
going to
make it.
Or you know he's going to get to the end. He might die, but you know you're going to follow this guy.
Yeah, there's a crazy...
If Leo DiCaprio was gone in the first 12 minutes, whoa, where's this going?
Yeah, now yeah. I'm curious.
Yeah, they won't do that.
Yeah, they would have had to have someone else say Rose 128 times.
It's more than that. It's more than
272
that.
Times.
It's more than that.
Well, can
I'm telling you, I think he even underwater. I
oh,
swear
really?
I
got
it.
Heard.
Was that the last thing he said? I'm scared of the 3D version. I think that name's going to be like, oh, my God.
They make those movies, and you're supposed to watch them with your wife, but my wife knows I'll never love her that much. I'll never be that.
Why, you're supposed to watch Titanic with your wife?
Well, it's just supposed to be like sort of a, well, it's not, hey, let's get a bunch of guys together, and when we're done playing Pinochle, we can watch Titanic.
No,
I've
got a good wife. That's not a she's we never watched Titanic together.
You know,
no, I saw it in a theater actually.
Now, do you feel I'm hopping around here, but you are so highly regarded comedically, and people look up to you, and you know I saw you on Jon Stewart and how he was kissing your ass, and everyone does. Brown noser, fine, but the point is this: do you ever have this feeling of And maybe you did 10 years ago, that I've set the bar pretty high for myself comedically, and Jon Stewart is never going to feel any better about me than he already does, and all I could do is possibly disappoint him by going on his show, that maybe I shouldn't go on people's shows, because everyone thinks of me a certain way.
That was a 30-year-old brain. I told you, I don't care anymore.
No, that's what I'm saying.
If you live like that, then you're Howard Hughes in a room until you die. You can't.
I'm saying, I look at it
a different way. I have worked hard enough that I can do, if I want to trash my own career, it's all there for me.
Right.
I can do anything I want. I can bring myself down 8 notches and still be okay.
Yeah, I mean, circa 1993.
Yeah, you know, but you want to know the truth? Is that nobody gives a shit about you or me.
I know.
You know, I mean, I love Jon Stewart. It's a great show to do. And I like his show. And he's very nice to me. But he's got a next guest the next day and a next guest. And he's got a wife and his family. And who cares about you?
Nobody.
So I'm saying that when you're younger, and the world revolves around you when you're starting your career and your brain is going, oh, my God, what are people going to think? Then you realize people don't give a shit.
Right.
People don't give a shit, you know? I mean, when Lindbergh crossed the Atlantic, they gave him a parade. Then what did people do? They went home to their own lives, you know? They thought about that for an hour. So it doesn't really matter.
No, I agree.
So I don't think like that, no.
Not now you don't.
No, I did. I used
to. That's what I'm saying. You used to think that way.
Because that was in the stage where you're building the house.
Right.
And you worry, okay, the front door looks good. What if the window doesn't look good?
Right.
You know, that's the time where you're supposed to worry.
Right.
But if you think like that all the way to your death,
no.
Something's wrong.
But isn't it sort of liberating now to be in this
stage? Yeah, by the way, you can never win that game. That's an unwinnable game. You will always disappoint.
So do you feel now, just in terms of big picture, in terms of your life, where you're at, is this the most comfortable you've been?
I make a nice living.
I don't mean that way.
Oh, yeah, that was... Oh, Adam.
Adam. No, what I'm saying is just in terms of, here's a saying I have. I say this: if the phone rings and you dive on it, that's a bad sign. If you're just sitting around the house, and the phone rings and you stare at it thinking, "Who's that?" That's a bad sign. But if the phone rings and you just organically, naturally walk up to it in about 2.5 rings and pick it up, that's a good place to be. That means you're not desperate, and you're not scared, and not, who is that? It's a bill collector.
This is me. You tell me where I'm at.
Okay.
I always let the answering machine get it and listen to the voice and see if I want to talk. Is that healthy?
I think that's pretty good.
I've done that forever.
But there's no, the phone doesn't ring and you don't think, oh, shit.
It's funny you said that. You know, this is great. I'll tell you something. When it changes now because of computers, but when you would open a movie, I mean, when you would have the critics screening for the movies,
right.
The publicity people,
sure,
like you wouldn't go to New York, but you know it would be the where all the reviews were going to come out,
mm-hmm.
and they would fax it to you,
right?
And the ring of the fax machine,
oh yeah,
still haunts me,
yeah,
because you know those were the only faxes I got, and it's got that funny little.
Yeah.
And I realized something, you know, what's going to come over here is going to make the next 4 months happy or miserable. And
right.
that was a thing I still, that noise still scares me. Because, you know, and it's interesting what you say about a phone call. Do you realize that the 4 or 5 most important moments of your life mostly come on the phone?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're told someone's dead, you're told you gotta go, you're told it didn't go well. I mean, that's, you
right.
know, that's. I've always thought about that, that the biggest information has come on the telephone for me.
Right.
When my mother passed away, I wasn't told how serious it was while I was standing there.
Right.
Someone had to call me.
Right.
So the fax machine represented my heart racing. So,
right.
so that's the relationship I had. The phone, I don't really, I don't think about too much. I just let the machine answer.
And now,
so if you called, I'd pick it up.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
If you heard me, I mean, you screen it.
I listen. I have an old-fashioned one where you can hear it.
Yeah, my mom has one of those, and she thinks I have one of those, although I've never had one of those.
Well, what does she
pick up?
Well, what is she saying to?
She's saying pick up.
Oh, to a telephone?
To an automated whatever.
Oh, that's funny.
In India somewhere.
That's funny.
Yeah.
No,
can
to the phone company's
this
machine.
That's important. Yeah,
that's
pick up.
That's funny. I love that.
I know. It's amusing the first 250 times she does it. Eventually, gets old.
I got out all of that stuff in the movie Mother because, everything with a phone with my mother was... call waiting. I mean, I have it in the movie, but that was just like the most fun thing that ever. I'd hear that click, and I'd know it would be 20 minutes
right.
of trying to, hello? No, it's me. Oh. You know, just on and on. They didn't, I wonder if we're going to be that to our kids. I'm sure we will.
I hope we're worse.
I'm sure we'll be worse.
They would not, my grandfather and mom don't really acknowledge it or wouldn't acknowledge it. So I'd say, hold on, there's someone on the other line, and they just keep going.
Because to acknowledge it means that they've lost it.
You know,
why would you acknowledge it? You're right. I should just kill myself.
Do you you ever find this? You walk around and people recognize you.
Yeah.
And speaking of the phone, I have found that a cell phone only really counts as sort of half a phone call to the people that are interrupting you. Meaning, if you're sitting in your office and you're holding a phone up, and it's got a cord on it, and you're having a conversation, and somebody walks into your office, they give a hup, and then they give a throwing the point at their watch, or do 1 minute
right.
or something,
it's
and they back out. I've been at the gas station talking on a cell phone and have people come, hey, man show, and I do the, so I'm on a cell phone, hey, when are you and Jimmy going to get back together again and do, and I'm having a conversation,
right.
It doesn't really
and
count.
Why?
No,
because
no
why is
cord.
There, because the places with the cord, they can't come.
Oh.
You're going to them with a cell phone.
Yeah.
If you took your corded phone to a gas station, they'd say the same thing.
So you're saying if I took my phone...
It's the place where the cords are. There's your last semblance
right.
of privacy.
Or invited them into your...
2030, the real story of what happens to America. I just had to edit it. Anyway,
no, it's good. And you go to amcroll.com, and then we have a link up there for Albert's book. And now...
No, your audience would like this book.
Oh, they will.
And I God spoke to me, and I know what's going to happen in 20 years. It's not just my conjecture. I know what's going to happen.
A lot of the stuff is really interesting and makes a lot of sense. And one of the topics Albert touches on is the fact that, you know, when people all live to 95 years of age... It seems great for the individual, but what about the society? I always felt this way about smokers when everyone was like, you know, Rob Reiner was like, we got to charge another $5 a pack because of because of the money it costs society.
Just let them die?
I thought my grandfather, when he was 70 years old or 65 years old, he was a smoker. And the doctor said, you don't quit smoking, you're going to have a massive heart attack and die. He had a heart attack. He said, you don't quit smoking, you're going to have another heart attack and you're going to die. And he quit smoking, and he lived to about 94, 95, and must have cost us $10 million his last 6 years on the planet, back and forth to Kaiser in Panorama City. And I thought, as a tax, you know, as a grandson, I'm glad he's around. But as a taxpayer, I wish he would have kept up the smoking and just had a massive coronary at 70.
Well, I, you know, bless her heart, if I read one more story about Zsa Zsa Gabor going back into the hospital,
sure.
I think she died two years ago.
What's up? It's a little joke we planned.
I think that she died 2 years ago, and that Prince husband just has to keep this going to get in the paper. Because she can't, I can't, you know, I see it on Yahoo. I see the name. Okay, this must be the dad. Click. Zsa Zsa Gabor now lost two legs and one arm.
Right.
You know, she has a massive infection. Prince Anhalt says she may not be able to go home. Then she goes home for a month. Then she's rushed back in. Now she has no limbs and no head.
Yes.
She's just a heaving, breathing breast, and Prince Anhalt says she may not make it. Jesus Christ. So you talk about $10 million.
Yes.
And by the way,
she's a knight from a Monty Python movie.
How did Zsa Zsa Gabor even get like we're talking about her? There's not even a movie anyone can name. It's not like Elizabeth Taylor. Where did Zsa Zsa Gabor, and they keep putting that picture of her when she's 20. She wasn't even on Green Acres.
Right,
that was
Ava.
She was on I've Got a Secret. I just think it's so funny. All the people on Yahoo see that name.
It'll be awesome.
Oh, my God. Hey, Dad, Zsa Zsa Gabor is back in the hospital.
And, well, it'll be great when they go to you for comment after she does die and you do 20 minutes. Well, I don't even know who she is. What did she invent something? Is there something that
they're
she did
come
that
to
I'm
me,
aware
They're going to come to me for comments.
Nice.
I'll give my comment now. They can take it from your podcast. It's a sad day when the last of the Gabor sisters has finally gone.
Yes.
The
prince.
Her husband, something's wrong with that guy.
Well, or
no, I'm
terribly right.
No, I'm telling you. She's been dead for 3 years. He's trying to keep
her.
He's trying to keep his business up.
What if she did slap a cop in 89?
That's right.
She's famous for that.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, I like him because he wears the burnt orange turtlenecks with the medallion on the outside of the turtleneck and really just looks like a European cartoon character. Like, I mean, he looks like something.
Didn't he like claim the pregnant? He claimed to be the father of what's his name and the baby?
when there was that, I don't know if it's an Octomom thing or something.
No.
That.
What was it? It was just recently where he said he was the father of
somebody was pregnant. Nobody knew who the dad was, and he threw his cock in the ring.
Right. Prince Anhalt. I'm the father.
Yeah, he's a publicity whore.
Oh, yeah. Right. No, she's dead.
He's definitely dead.
No, 3 years ago. I went to her funeral.
Really?
No, he wheels in an empty cart to Reagan and pays the money to say Zsa Zsa's back in the hospital.
It is, yeah, well, the point is this. If she had just kept chain smoking, she would have died in 1963, and we would not be footing the bill for this.
Well, we are going to keep people alive, and I mean, and so in the book, cancer is cured, which is a good thing, but, you know, what I've always thought is that Newton's law is never applied to actual things. They only apply it to, like, physics.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you cure cancer, and then what's the reaction to that?
Right.
You cure disease, you have all these people living, and of course, you know, one of the themes of the book is the young and old revolution that I think is coming, and I do think it's coming. I think young people are going to, not going to take it anymore. It's going to be, because right now when you hear about these ideas floated about Medicare, we have to cut Medicare, they always say, but not anyone who's old.
Right.
I mean, you know, no. I mean, if you're 10, you're going to be in trouble. But the 60-year-olds are okay.
Sure.
So all of these future cuts are coming out of children.
Right.
Who are I think when they wake up and realize it, they're going to get pissed.
Well, I have this theory that sounds a little bit harsh, but you can tell me if you agree or disagree.
Bubonic plague.
It's connected to it. Yeah, it's you know, whenever they do those movies where they say, all right, someone builds a time machine,
yeah,
and they go, you, when you go back in time, you can't disturb anything, you can't touch anything,
right?
Because, by the way, I'd be like, then fuck it, I'm not going back, because I gotta fuck with stuff, otherwise I'm not going back. But,
right,
but they do,
like you could go back in time, and then if you could, you couldn't touch anything,
right?
It's just, it's like,
if
it's,
you disturb anything, it might,
by the way, I can't stand time machine movies.
It's, they're cop-out movies.
I can't stand it. It makes no sense to me.
Well, what about movies like this? Or you tell me this, and then I'll get back to that. But it drives me nuts when there's a premise that's wildly false, which is, hey, Jim Carrey is an asinine lawyer who basically, you know, he mistreats women and clients alike, and then one day he has to tell the truth. He cannot stop telling the truth. And you go, well, that's interesting, but why?
What is that? I mean, that's good.
What would... Have you never heard of this one?
No.
Liar, liar?
Oh, that sounds funny.
Oh, come on. Okay. The point is this. So you go, well, why is it? Well, his son makes a wish on his
birthday. Come on. Half the movies made in America are based on children making wishes.
Well, I don't like
the body,
that.
The body changing, I wish I was that, I wish I was that.
It doesn't mean anything to me.
No, I mean, it's called fantasy.
All right. What about this? Tell me, I'll give you a semi-grim thought. Speaking of, in a way, a modern-day version of what you're talking about regarding, you know, curing cancer and everyone living to 100. So, and my time machine theory, which I got from watching movies, which is we are altering the course of things, and we have to be careful what we ask for. And we, for instance, drop off millions of metric tons of grain to Africa every year and mosquito nets and all kinds of stuff, basically attempting to keep people alive who are essentially killing themselves through overpopulation and disease and many other societal problems.
So we should kill them.
Not kill them.
Just don't help them.
Maybe we should let them die out, and then maybe the next generation would have learned from those mistakes.
I don't know. I don't think you can do that.
Too morbid a thought?
Yeah,
if
you really want to,
are
you sort of serious about this?
I'm sort of serious, yeah.
You got to send food, but something else will happen. The population won't be allowed to grow as it is. It just won't. Nature won't allow it.
Well, trying not to allow it, but we're intervening. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I know, but we're not intervening enough to, we're not keeping the population growing by sending the rice to the people in Africa.
Well, how about some condoms?
You know, you'd have to, well, but by the way, you know, look at the Middle East. There's, I think, 60% of that population is under 20. And it, or maybe that's not the right number, but it's a huge number, and it's growing. People have many children there. That's not Africa.
Right.
That, you know, in the Middle Eastern countries, the population's going crazy, and that's what people do. They don't want to have condoms. China's one child rule is creating. You know, you talk about affecting the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's creating a lot of gay Chinese people that never existed before.
Yeah.
There's no one to fuck.
I got to say...
right. They want one kid. They want the boy. And now they've got like this, you know, 2 billion Vienna boys choir walking around.
I'm not gay, but if I was gay, I think I might go Chinese.
Really?
I feel like that'd be the least impactful sort of, you know, for all the things I don't like about guys.
By the
way,
let's add that to president's least likely to get the people least likely to get laid. If you were gay, who would you go to list?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should be.
I don't think I'd go to China first.
Where would you head?
Greece.
Yeah.
Sure.
Just because it's named after a lubricant?
Well, all the statues were from there.
Oh, that's true. So those guys look good there.
Yeah.
Uncut, though.
By the way, it's always been rumored that someone made him shorten the penis on, you know, Michelangelo had to shorten the penis on David. Because,
oh, really?
Yeah, because it's a smaller penis, and maybe it's a lie, but I just thought it was a funny idea that, you know, he finished and it was like a 9-inch penis, and the king said, "What the fuck? Get out of there!
Yeah,
take that off!
Yeah,
my wife sees that."
Yeah. But sire, where are you going to hang your hat?
Yeah. On the toe.
I didn't know the David can't be happy about that. I mean, if David was really packing nine, and then he showed went to the art museum and
maybe
he sees
it's,
a four,
maybe
he's
it's a lie.
Be upset.
I heard it at the Friars. I don't know. Maybe it's a lie.
So what's next for you, Albert? I know that's one of those shitty interview questions, but
well, I'm in this movie that is at Cannes. I'm going to actually play Paul Rudd's father in this movie that Judd Apatow is directing this summer.
I've not heard either one of those names, but continue. That sounds good. Do you want to make more movies?
Yes, I want to make more movies. I have to figure out how much I can raise and can I actually shoot a movie on an iPhone.
Isn't it a pain in the ass?
It's a pain in the ass, Adam. It's a pain in the ass because, you know, I admire that Woody Allen was the last person that I've ever heard of to be able to bypass all what I call the third act of movie making, which is the studio and the testing and the cards.
Right.
And he just never had to do that. So that is the stuff that takes the life out of you. The writing is fun, the casting is fun, the filming is great, and then it comes down to business. Now, if you're blessed like Jim Cameron or Steven Spielberg and the business is great, it must be a wonderful life. But if, you know, I've never made these studios rich and they... There was a time at which people felt responsible to keep making things they thought were good. Mm-hmm. But the same mindset that says, fuck NPR, is really saying, fuck that, too.
Right.
So when you don't make these people profits, they just don't like you. So it's like it's like a divorce. It's like sitting with a divorce and with a lawyer when a movie is not testing well,
right,
and you got to sit with a studio. It's just one of the worst days.
Yeah, because once you go back in the edit bay,
there's nothing to do. It's the movie, and they saw all the dailies, and they were all happy about it. And then some people in Pasadena write a card that they don't like, and then they accuse you of killing their children. What did you do to this from the last time I saw it? Nothing. You saw it this morning. No, but you did something, because look what the card says. So it's I'm just saying that's the tough part of movie making.
It's insane, but I sat with Francis Ford Coppola about 5 miles from here and did this kind of interview with him. And he said, I couldn't get a movie made in Hollywood. I could get a gangster movie made, but they wouldn't let me do another movie.
How long ago did he say that?
This was about 9 months ago, maybe a year ago.
I don't think it's even true today.
All I'm saying is it's a sad state of affairs.
Right.
Robert Brooks's and the Francis Ford Coppola's.
I can get a movie made. I just have to, it has to be at a number where people can write it off in their mind. But generally, when it's at that number, it doesn't trigger the machine.
Right.
You know, movies don't come out on their own. It costs a lot of money to get a movie into a theater.
Right.
So if you spend $100 million on a piece of crap, you're going to spend $60 million to get people to see it. You have to. The machine tells them you have to do this. If you spend $10 million, you write it off.
Right.
You don't throw it. It means nothing to you.
Right.
So that's the thing. If you want your movie seen, you know,
it's a catch-22 in the sense that if you can make it at a low enough budget, they'll let you make it. It's no big deal. But then if it's no big deal.
Exactly. You can't sit at the table.
Right.
You know, unless you're, and people say, well, what about, you know, Greek Wedding? Those things are like Halley's Comet. They're coming fewer and fewer. That independent hit, it's almost becoming non-existent. When was the last one?
No, listen, I know. I made an independent movie.
I don't support the arts.
But I did see Fast and Furious 1 through 5. I only see movies over $85 million.
I understand that.
But, I
mean the one where Vin Diesel went back to his neighborhood?
Vin went. Okay, Albert, it's totally awesome.
Okay,
Vin, he's got huge guns. Like, he's totally working out for the movie.
What do you mean, big hog?
Big hog. Except,
oh, you mean literally? Literally
shortened it.
Oh, I
actually,
see.
It was all in the director's.
I thought that was like slang.
No, no.
Oh, okay.
He's got guns. He's got big arms.
Oh, wow.
Okay? And he's totally buff.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
No one will mess with him.
Oh, no.
Because he's tough, you know?
No, he's
and
good.
He doesn't take shit. He's kind of like me that way.
Right.
And that he doesn't talk a lot, but he lets his guns do his talking, you know?
He got his housekeeper pregnant.
He did, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's how buff he is.
So, I made an independent movie, and I went through the same.
Yes, I know.
The same
but you,
world.
But you got very good reviews.
I did, which made it even worse.
I didn't see it because I don't patronize anything.
Oh, but Albie.
See, it doesn't feel good,
no,
does
it? No, it doesn't.
No, okay.
I'm getting you free.
Okay.
I brought a copy for you.
You and I are going to the symphony tonight.
And then we're going to watch my movie. So, Albert, I feel like I have so much to talk to you about. I know your time is precious.
How long have we been here?
It's been an hour.
Wow. It really feels like it.
I was
guessing 90 minutes.
Well, it could be a self-fulfilling prophecy. All I want is we'll just do a quick synopsis of your entire career, and then we'll put a bow on it.
Do you remember a comedian named Lenny Kent? You don't.
No.
Lenny Kent used to come out at the end of the Merv Griffin shows and do the whole show in a minute. Mm-hmm. He would do the synopsis of the show. So then Merv came out. He said, "What? You look fat to think." And then Joshua came and sang. And I think that was his act. He would sum up the whole show in 1 minute.
Oh, these Asians. So, born where?
Here, Los Angeles.
Los Angeles, me too. And
really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I was in the Valley.
Okay, I was in Benedict Canyon.
Close enough.
Yeah, about six houses from Joshua.
The order... The late great. The order is in terms of who came out of mama first. I know we have.
I'm the last child.
You're the last. Yeah. Cliff second. And
Cliff first. Bob second.
Cliff first.
Me last. Yeah.
I find.
Why do you want to know this now?
I think people are interested in this.
People are interested.
I couldn't find.
By the way, I didn't congratulate you on that Guinness book.
Oh, thank you.
That's the most amazing thing. So more downloads than Kevin Pollak, huh?
What's up? Yeah. I couldn't. Do you get along well with Super Dave? Because I can't picture two people that are further apart.
No, you know, I love him as my brother and everything, but we don't really spend time together.
Is it because he's him?
I don't know. I don't want to talk about it.
All right, he's an in your face kind of.
Are you close to your sister?
Not that close, no.
Is anybody close to their sibling?
I'm a little closer to Super Dave than I am to my sister.
Okay, well, I'd like to meet your sister, but I want to tell you.
I don't know.
No,
Super Dave's relentless.
I've never seen, I know they exist, but I just don't believe that when I say, I talk to my sister every day, I talk to my brother every day. I don't, other than Donnie and Marie, because you have to before you go on stage, who talks to their family every day once they get older?
Well, Zsa Zsa and Ava used to speak quite frequently.
Oh, God, you're going to make me cry.
No, darling.
Hello, darling.
This thing where...
Are you dead? Yes, you? Yes.
Put the prints on.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like this, and I know you probably feel the same way, which is you watch these TV shows. Someone has a business. They've started the business with their sister or their brother. They claim to be best friends. And I think, how is this possible?
Well, I mean, Ann's Sons was a big American business model.
Sure.
But mostly the sons were alive when the father was dead.
Right.
It's not like they were all in the same room together.
Right.
Rockefeller and Sons, the first Rockefeller was long gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear about that the other three Rockefellers never spoke to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, some families are talk a lot. I would think that if I had a sister, it would be easier because, you know, you're not the same. You're not the same.
There's a little competition.
There's less competition, isn't it?
No, no. I mean, now, no. Yeah, if you had a sister who worked at a children's hospital, it'd be much easier just to converse with her.
Do you think does Julia and Eric Roberts speak every day?
No, everybody in show business that has a spouse, or I should say sibling in show business, despises each other. It's a strange thing. I mean, Frank Stallone.
Okay, I think we got to wrap this up.
What's up?
I love my brother.
Okay,
and I don't
Frank Stallone,
anybody. Not
a huge fan of Sly. That's all. Okay, you scoff at Frank Stallone.
How can I answer that?
I'm not asking you to answer. I'm just
saying. And yet, Frank Sinatra and his son were like this.
And I think we've come full.
Actually,
full
isn't that funny
that
Frank Sinatra's son conducted the band behind his dad?
Yeah,
I always thought that was. That will never happen in my family. I wouldn't allow my son to be... although my favorite movie growing up were The Seven Little Foys. The Bob Hope movie where the whole family went on vaudeville.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I always just... I liked that idea.
But I like... and I'll wrap this by paying you one more compliment. But don't let me put words in your mouth. I like the idea that you like the title of author and script writer and actor and comedian and sort of, do you just think of yourself as sort of a humorist who can be plugged into different applications? And when you do one for a while, does it make you kind of want to do the other, want to get in front of the camera when you've been behind the camera or locked up writing a book, make you want to do a movie?
Well, yeah, I mean, to give you an honest answer, four days ago when they said that the book made the New York Times bestseller list for fiction, it sort of felt like I was on acid, because it was like, wait, Jesus, how did that happen? That's so cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I know I've made movies for a long time and I understand that, but this was a new field. So to have any success in this was like great. And then as my wife said so lovingly, you can add that to your obituary.
Hurry.
Right. Academy Award nominated actor and best-selling author. Okay. So now?
Yeah. Plot next day. Right. Zsa Zsa's. But did they come to you and say, would you like to write a book?
Oh, no. I wrote that on spec. I didn't tell anybody. I sold the book after it was done because I didn't know if I would like it, and I didn't want to have a commitment, and, you know, I didn't want to feel pressure. Mm-hmm. So I didn't tell anybody except for my wife, and I wrote it, and I was always willing to, if I get to page 50 and I hate it, I'll just forget it.
And if... they come to you again. Now, this book's...
Well, they won't come. I mean, when you sign a deal, they have the right to look at another book.
Right.
So they're, I have to contractually show them something.
They get first look.
They get first look.
And this book would make a really expensive but interesting movie.
It's very expensive and very interesting. And I know that. And there's been people now who have talked to me about it and writing the script. And it's
exciting, flattering.
You know what? I've spent 2 years with this idea. I don't long to spend another 2 years right now with it. Mm-hmm. But I mean,
but it's poignant. Like, I always felt defending your life was incredibly poignant and important. Like, I thought it was just an important movie.
You know, a lot of people are now talking to me seriously about doing that of all the movies as a musical on Broadway.
There's so many people. I mean, it's the biggest question there is to almost every human being, and it was a very sensible and sort of important.
Because it was non-heaven-like. It was more practical. It was also based on the one thing that everybody is, and that's fear. You know, fear is our enemy. It's the enemy of the human mind. It's what kills us.
And I love the notion that you're judged and graded on your ability to handle fear.
Yeah.
And then sent back depending on how you did or advanced depending on how you did with fear.
Right.
It's just conceptually.
Yeah.
It's positive, it's strong, but the message when I left the theater was...
You went to the theater?
I went to the... Oh,
come on.
I snuck in. I
that
remember
was when
where
you were
it was.
Still patronizing
I said, No, I'm a huge fan, obviously. And I've always said this movie is an important movie. And people would say, oh, it's a funny movie. Well, I'd say, no, it's funny, but it's an important movie. There's more to it than just laughs. And it's great to go to the theater and laugh it up, but thinking it up is a good and important thing, too. And I just thought, you know, between that movie and now this book, that you have thoughts that sort of lean that way. Yeah. I mean, about the future and about man and existence and that kind of thing.
I've thought about the future. Look, I know I made that movie Real Life in 1979, and that was before any reality television. And,
sure.
And, you know, so I've always thought about what's coming. You know, I was friends with Harry Nilsson.
Mm-hmm. Cats in the Cradle guy?
Yeah.
Is that a different one?
Yeah, no. No, that's Harry Chapin.
Oh, right.
You know Harry Nilsson.
Yeah.
One is the...
Wait, who's sung about when he picked the chick up in his cab?
That's Harry Chapin. Oh, forget it. The story's going to really...
Wait, one is the loneliest number. That's the Three Dog Night.
No, it's right. It really ruins the story.
Right, anyway.
You know, I was friends with Franklin Roosevelt.
The guy who owns
the hotel in Hollywood? Yeah, yeah. And he was crippled, and he couldn't get up to the lobby.
I'm sorry, Harry Nilsson, yeah. Heavy guy. Interesting guy.
All right, yeah.
And, I know.
And he killed himself on drugs, but he was, you know, he got his... And through him, I became really... I was really friends with John Lennon, and it was like, oh, my God, you know. To know John Lennon was very cool. But Harry Nilsson always had an interesting concept of what the artist does.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a great visual. He said it's like a cattle drive, and the artist is supposed to go ahead and mm-hmm. sort of say, okay, it's all right.
Right.
It's, you know, that's sort of the job of the artist is mm-hmm. to like
move. He's a scout.
Move a scout.
He's Flint McCullough.
Okay, good night.
No, I'm just saying, in Wagon Train,
let's end.
There was Major Adams, and he had a scout named Flint McCullough.
Okay.
And Flint would go ahead.
I don't know what it means, but I'm still...
Flint would go ahead and he'd scout the territory.
Adam, congratulations on the Guinness Book. I hope you don't get in the Guinness Book again because it'll be for fat or something horrible.
I'm going for something related to facial hair.
Yeah. And you and I are similar. We stay home and we do what we can.
And we hope...
How old are your kids? You have one child?
I have twins.
Oh, 11-year-old girls?
No, they're 5. But we can get a play date.
I thought you just... Wait a minute.
I was being a politician when I was answering
the question. What, just lie about the age of your children?
What do you think politicians
do?
Don't be so naive.
Right? I have one child.
I added them together and they combined became the age of your daughter.
Do they love you? Watch what happens.
Oh, no, it's already on.
No, let me tell you something. It's something, you know, they warned us about the chemicals and the plastic bottles and the milk and everything.
Sure.
My daughter, at 11, has turned into Elizabeth Taylor.
Mm.
I mean, she just is like this adult I don't understand. And I mean, you know, it's something to watch.
Son different?
His voice hasn't dropped. He's
right.
Still sort of the little kid. But my daughter's like now heading into womanhood. I told Jimmy this last night, but it was funny because you snuggle them at night and tell them stories and everything, right? It's an important part of your life.
I kiss them to death. I wrestle the crap out of them.
Snuggling my kids was always the thing you just did. I told them an original story every night of their lives up until around 11, and then I ran out. And you know, kids have the opposite of Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. They remember everything.
Right.
So I mean, I repeat. I must have said 3,000 stories. I repeat one. You told that.
Right.
Well, an old candy maker. You told that he makes the candy, and then a witch comes. Well,
right.
How do you know that's what's going to happen? So the other night, two nights ago, my daughter's reading in bed, and I said, honey, it's time to go to bed. I said, do you want to snuggle? And she says to me, I'm good. I swear to God. It just haunted me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now it's... My daughter had her tonsils out yesterday, and when she was... She's 5. She had her tonsils and her adenoids removed, and when she was coming...
As a precaution?
I just thought she looked a little heavy. And, you know, we're such a visually oriented society, and for women to get along, I mean, we're in Hollywood and whatnot. You know, we live in a town.
No.
You know, for good or for bad. People are judged. They judge you.
It makes the neck look fat.
She looked a little heavy.
I understand.
And it was either that or cut her off the food, and, you know, I'm not a monster.
No, I understand.
And my feeling is long, it was like this. It's like when the mechanic says, look, as long as we got the rotors off, we can just go ahead and repack those front bearings. As long as the rotors are off. And then my thing is, as long as you're going after the tonsils, go for the adenoids. You're up on the rack.
We loaded up our Sharpay with Botox. He looks really good now. He's not that worried look is gone.
Right. My daughter started to come out. She was coming to.
She's gay?
She will be. I know my son is going to be, I now just pray he's going to be a top. I'm starting to manage my expectations.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Well, how many children do you have?
I have two. I have twins.
A boy, girl, twin.
Boy, girl,
twin. I didn't know. I forgot that was what twins were. They look alike?
No.
Well, what do twins mean?
I don't know. They came out of the same vagina at approximately the same time.
So you're on a podcast right now actually using a joke that your son will be a top.
No, I'm hoping. Don't jinx it. The point is that, hey, I've said in my book,
Chaz Bono telephone.
In my book,
white courtesy phone. Please.
I was talking about the future, and like your book, and I said, being gay in the future will probably not be a bad thing.
No, that was your title.
Yeah, growing up, especially being in Los Angeles, by the way,
that's in the discussion. I'm not going to get into with you now, but I have absolute. Huge theories that this, and I can prove it, that the sexes are merging.
Oh, it's all in my book as well. It's an X, I'm saying, and we're about to cross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not like in the next generation, but we're heading there.
We're getting there. And I said, you know, you can make gay jokes, but by the time my son gets to high school and he's going to his private school in Santa Monica, it's going to be the opposite, which is, hey, Corolla. He's not sucking cock. Let's get him. And then he's going to have to make excuses. No, I'm just tired from sucking cock. I'm just taking a rest. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know about that.
School. You don't know?
I don't know. That discussion on a playground.
You're right.
Hey, Corolla. He's not sucking cock. Let's get him.
He thinks he's too good to suck cock.
What school is that?
I'm saying it's in Santa Monica in 2027.
That's all I'm saying.
All I'm saying is this.
Hey, Corolla, you don't butt fuck. I butt fuck. Let's get him. And then we get the principal's office
seat. Yeah.
Your son is not sucking cock he's supposed to be.
But wait, I ask him every day when he comes home from school if he's chugged cock. He
don't
says
you know
yes.
What this discussion means? We've gone too long.
We've gone too long.
This is
all
like
right.
you're drunks.
Right. You're right. We're drunk. But yeah,
have your audience buy the book and support a writer.
I will say Albert Brooks, 2030, the real story of what happens to America.
And as a man who doesn't read, you're enjoying it.
I'm enjoying. I'm over 100 pages in.
For you, that's amazing.
There's an earthquake. I don't want to spoil too much, but I'm very deeply immersed into this book. And
it's going to happen. God spoke to me.
I'm a massive, massive fan, and thank you for taking time out of, I was going to say your busy schedule, but it seems quite leisurely, to sit down with me. And make time for our audience.
It was you today, and then I've got how to ensure your son is gay class to go later.
Albert, a dream come true, and I hope to have you on soon.
All right.
Again.
Well, I thought this was all not recorded.